You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Today is Wednesday. Got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you must do, can do, should do, and will do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, it's raining here in Atlanta. But still, things have to get done, they will get done, especially as it relates to us. We're going to get it done. That's right. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Well, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and entitled from my good brother, Brother Kwaku. But you can just put into the search, you know, whatever your search engine is, and put that information in there, you know, Baba Oshi, BABAOSHI.net, BabaOshi.net, and there will be programs that are dated and entitled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. On Mondays from 8 to 9, from 8 to 9, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamal Kamban, Dr. Mawia Kamban, and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Roger. They had a good program last night talking about jazz. I didn't know that was my good brother Olu, who's a saxophone player. I didn't know that, but Brother Olu's a good man. And we're talking about jazz artists, and I just mentioned the fact that I was blessed way back in the early 70s to go to this nightclub called Teddy's that had jazz artists. And I had a reason why, because of my first wife, her brother was an artist. He was a saxophone player. He played alto sax. He loved Cannonball Adderley, but he introduced me to Coltrane and so many other people, Pharoah Sanders. I mean, man. And so I went to Teddy's whenever I heard who was going to be there. I saw Rashawn Roland Kurt. All these people. All these are jazz greats. They are past now. Freddie Hubbard, Eddie Harris, Stanley Turrentine, Esther Phillips. I mean, so many people. Roy Ayers, before he went commercial. I mean, man, so many. But anyway, back to the story. So that was Dr. Rogers' topic last night. Always great topics. Dr. Rogers' program on Tuesday nights is a must listen. And that's 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. right here on Time for an Awakening Radio. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters, time for an awakening at 8 p.m. on Fridays with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sundays at 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, go to the website, WeBuyBlack.com, also to contribute to the effort to open a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. That's all I'm going to say for right now, because you know I'll go off. I'm serious. It's ridiculous, but I'll go off. My good brother, Bomani Tahemba, brothers and sisters, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. This brother has taken over 500 of our people to the motherland. He is doing an outstanding job. He deserves to be supported. But you have the opportunity when you go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, because everything that you need to take this trip of a lifetime is right there for you. The next upcoming trip is May 24th to June 5th. Going to Ghana, then November 17th through the 28th, going to Tanzania, then December 24th to January 5th, 2023. Now, the other two trips are $3,800. This one is $4,000, increased by $200. And the Senegal and Gambia trip, which was April 1st to 11th, which is now March 31st to April 10th, 2023, is still only $3,800. And you can still take advantage of that to go to Senegal and Gambia. Once again, there's land for sale. There's investment at the Black Star Repatriation and Pan-African Community in Ghana. All kinds of things that you can do. But brothers and sisters, if you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani for videos. For pictures, photos, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. And if you want to give Brother Bomani a call, please do so at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Habashaw Incorporated. Habashaw stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Their brothers and sisters are doing the work. The Kashi Projects is well informed that the areas and programs that they have is Habashaw Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Urban Green Jobs, Golden Growers, and the repatriation is happening. Go to Kashi International Launch, which is going to be in October 18th through the 17th of this year in Ghana. They're going to show you all the great things that they have done and doing with the Kashi Project in Ghana. Habashawincorporated.org. LEDGE Program. LEDGE, the Environmental Development for Group Economics. That's right. For Group Economics, the LEDGE Program. Brothers and sisters, you know, I'm telling you, LEDGE deals with the four areas of human existence. They deal with food, water, clothing, and shelter. You know, they have 12 projects in 6 different countries with 170 employees and over 260 members. And brothers, if you become a member, you have the opportunity to buy land at $250 an acre in Tanzania. You know, beautiful Tanzania. You know, Mount Kilimanjaro, the safaris, just fantastic. I wanted to make that trip. I'm still going to once my health improves and, you know, I can breathe freely on my own without supplemental oxygen. We'll see.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
I hope that happens. I'm praying that it does. Yeah. So, the LEDGE Group. Check them out. Go to theledgegroup.com. Land for the environmental development of group economics. Abibia Toomey. ABIBITUMI.com. Abibiatoomey.com. They have great programs. Go online to abibiatoomey.com and make it a favorite. Go to the shop that they have. All kinds of the feedback. All kinds of good stuff on that website, abibiatoomey.com. Abibiatoomey.com. Smy Pharmacy. And Smy is SMAI
pharmacy is spelled F-A-M-A-C-Y. So farm. Let's see. Smile Pharmacy. Because they are promoting the kind of health that is necessary, not the pharmaceuticals. No, they're promoting health through diet, through all kinds of changes. So check with Brother Jabril. Give Brother Jabril a call. You can give him a call at 731-327-6229. That's 731-327-6229. Or you can drop him a line on his email, okay, at smifarmacy@gmail. Smi, smifarmacy@gmail.com. Smi Pharmacy. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, Georgia, on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. They have delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and, oh man, just great stuff. On weekends, they have a vegan food on Saturday and Sunday. And it's a great place to network and so forth. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Check them out. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Check it out. That if you're in the Atlanta area, off of Highway 166, the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia's bookstore. She's moved from where she was to a bigger place, so she has more room, you know, because she has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, gift certificates, all kinds of good stuff. So check her out. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. My good brother Gazim Deyajamu of the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia. He also has a fine selection of books. He also has the red, black, and green shoes, all kinds of good stuff, T-shirts. Man, a delicious coffee bar with African coffees and teas, serving bean pie, yeah. So give him a call at 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia, which is west of here off of I-20. Also west of there off of I-20 is the new Black Wall Street Market. Used to be a Target, and now it's the new Black Wall Street Market. One of the stores in there is Athletics, which is the African-themed sports apparel with the names of, like, the Dogon Star Seed, the Moors, the Olmecs, the Zulus, the Herus, the Rebels, all kind of good stuff, man. Yeah. So check it out. And there's other stores in there at the new Black Wall Street Market, located in Stonecrest area. Stonecrest. Us Lifting Us to Economic Development for our people. Us Lifting Us. Tomorrow is their Thursday night broadcast at 9 p.m. from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us. If you want to call to listen, or if you have a question, comment, or concern, you can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, located in Macon, Georgia, at 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give my good brother, Brother Beecher, a call at 478-256-1166, 478-256-1166. He has everything. He's got furniture. He's got clothing. He even has a vegan restaurant, you know. And I'm telling you, man, you got to go check it out. So if you're in the Macon area, if you're going through there, man, please stop. Give the brother a shout out. Give him some presents and give him some business. That's the deal. Give him some business. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, for more information, please contact my good sister, Shelly Amonsett. Shelly Amonsett's number is 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. 3. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-Aidi, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia is doing great work, Sister Gabby, and so you got to check her out. Go online to sanjay-aidi.org. Sanjay, SONJE-AYITI.org. And help, because, you know, they deal with education. You look at the children. They're beautiful. They have their uniforms on. They deal with health, particularly for the children. They're in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. They're up in the hills. They ain't getting no money, brothers and sisters. Haiti doesn't have, you know, anything to give out to other areas when they can't even deal with getting the capital together. So they rely on the goodness of us. And so please go to Sanjay, SONJE-AYITI.org. Akabin Institute, located here in Atlanta, Baba Barudi and Mama Inya Barudi, they deserve support because they don't, because they're doing what we're supposed to do. Okay, educating our children, making them warriors, helping them understand their responsibility to each other and to us as a community and a people. Akabin Institute. Make your check and money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You can use PayPal or Cash App. If you use Cash App, put in the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, then Barudi, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your contributions. Baba Barudi is a prolific writer, Akabin House. If you want to get any of his books, go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com. Speaking of which, well, let me get this out the way too. Baba Barudian, he has the identity course, identity, the culture, society, and person, frontline concepts in African-centered psychology. It's a four-week course, each Wednesday starting March 2nd. That's next week Wednesday through March 23rd, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 to 9. It's an hour and a half course. Donation, adults, $60 for the course or $20 per class. Youth, $45 and then $15 per class. $45 for the course. Okay? You can email Baba Barudi at mwalimubarudi@yahoo.com. Give him a call at 404-753-7237. 404-753-7237. And of course, for the course, if you know that you're going to do it, then include the pertinent information. Once again, for adults, it's $60 for the whole course, or $20 per class. For the youth, $40 for the course, or $15 per class. You can use PayPal, which is YaBarudi@yahoo.com, PayPal, YaBarudi@yahoo.com, or once again, the Cash App, the dollar sign, YaMBarudi. And of course, the information is vital. Identity course, your name, your email address, where to send the link to. Brothers and sisters, that's happening next week, Wednesday. Next week, Wednesday. Yep. Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 22nd. If you want to know how much independent power we have, count the number of Africans you know who can and will speak out openly against European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy. Very few, I think you will find. This is because we are nearly all employed by Caucasian people, and we know that if we do anything to attack their system and their, quote, power, they will attack us. And one of the best ways to do it is to take away one's job. Paul Ifayomi Grant. Victory is in the hands guided by the minds of those warriors who have already won. If you come to the basketball court, soccer field, the chessboard, full of apprehension and doubt because of your opponent's record or fabricated reputation, then you have already lost. If you are weary of battle, even though the war has yet to be won, and allow the enemy's propaganda of their progress and righteousness to seep into your infected, your morale, you have already begun the process of self-defeat. Warriors must be ever vigilant of every thought entering their conscious and subconscious being, for weak, indulgent, indecisive, defeatist thinking leads to easy defeat. No matter the odds, no matter the duration in battle, no matter the difficulty, only the strength given through heartfelt courage brings victory. Affirm, I create my own employment. I know that's right. Affirm, I create my own employment. You read this one. Let me read this one here. It is far better to be free to govern or misgovern yourself than to be governed by anybody else. Kwame Nkrumah. It is far better to be free to govern or misgovern yourself than to be governed by anyone. That's the real definition, dear brothers. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Do for ourselves. We can never overemphasize the importance of tradition. Our traditions are all that have come to work for us. They reflect our human essence, our interpretation of the universe, and the most apparent manifestation of our deepest imperatives. In contrast to what those who work to bend our minds to their will have taught us, being traditional does not mean being archaic, outdated, outmoded, primitive, backwards, useless or out of sync with reality. No, for tradition is no more or less than all of the intellectual, mechanical, and metaphysical technology which naturally maintains the people as they have come to see themselves. It is the result of untold generations consciously working together to correct their errors and perfect those corrections. Tradition is the culmination of all that has been tried and proven true through the experience of a people. It defines that people's worth and existence. Without tradition, a people cease to exist. Let me repeat. Without tradition, a people cease to exist. For these reasons and more, we must get over the idea that our traditions, in and of themselves, but especially relative to Europeans, are bad, dysfunctional, useless, or liabilities. We must stop allowing others to convince us that most traditions do not make sense and do not have to make sense, and therefore can be discarded at will. No. Affirm, I follow and build on African traditions. Affirm, I follow and build on African traditions. February 23rd. This is one of the paradoxes of human behavior, that the very things that shape us and make us behave the way we do, to see the world the way we see it, relative to people's the way to relate to them, are those things that occur in our lives at points we cannot remember or recall. Dr. Amos Wilson, that's who we are making tribute today. Today is Dr. Amos Wilson's birthday, and Baba Baruti has put him right here on his birthday in the Inye Sesem. But the narrative is, whew. This is one of the paradoxes of human behavior, that the very things that shape us and make us behave the way we do, to see the world the way we see it and relate to the people the way we relate to them, are those things that occurred in our lives at points we cannot remember or recall, and many of us don't want to recall. Imagine lying in filth, disease, spittle, vomit, pus, slime, unidentified secretions from bed sores, fleas, ringworms, and lice. Imagine worms, maggots, and bodily waste, maggots thriving in the bed sores on your back, arms, legs, head, whip welts, and the wounds cut and opened by the metal cuffs locked to your wrists, your ankles, and sometimes even your neck. Imagine the never-ending scratching, tearing through skin wherever you could reach to get to the parasites and the disease infesting your body. Imagine sweat, tears, human and rat feces, blood, pieces of flesh, teeth, toenails, fingernails, hair, menstrual blood, aborted feces, broken water, dead babies, afterbirth, screaming, moaning, numbing pain, living bodies not moving for days. This is not fiction, brothers and sisters. It was the worst nightmare in humanity. It was raw, unrelenting horror. Only someone seeking to universalize and normalize European barbarities or make our Holocaust. This was a hell of a cost. Less tragic than it actually was or would paint a picture that allows us to rest easy with our past as it mercilessly dehumanized enslaved people. Affirm, remembrance has awakened me to do what must be done. Affirm, remembrance has awakened me to do what must be done. Developing African consciousness. Man, I tell you, Amos Wilson. That's our discussion for today, brothers and sisters. We're talking about Amos Wilson, Dr. Amos Wilson. His seminal book, his seminal work, Blueprint for Black Power. And, you know, what's interesting about Blueprint for Black Power, you know, he died right after that came out. You know, he was born in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And, in fact, he died before it came out, I believe. Yeah. Let me see. Yeah. Yeah, he died in 95. It came out in 98. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, he was born February 23rd, 1941. In Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and he died January 14th, 1995. He was a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a social theorist, deeply a Pan-African thinker, scholar, author, and professor of psychology at the City University in New York. Born once again in Hattiesburg, Mississippi in 1940, Wilson completed his undergrad degree at Morehouse here in Atlanta, his master's at the New School of Social Research, and attained his PhD from Fordham University in New York. Wilson worked as a sociologist, social caseworker, supervising probation officer, and a training administrator in New York City Department of Juvenile Justice. As an academic, Wilson also taught at City University of New York from 1981 to 86, and then at the College of New Rochelle in the suburbs of New York from 87 to 95, at the time of his homegoing. You know, what's interesting here, I remember talking with some others, and we talked about people who, heroes in our lives, who had died early in their lives, like him. He was 54. He was 54. He'd be 81, I think it is now. At 54, he died. And Bobby Wright, Dr. Bobby Wright, his death. Harold Washington. Many people. George G.M. James, when he died too early, and died to me suspiciously, in that possibly that they were killed, that they were murdered, you know, by those who, just like what J. Edgar Hoover said in his memo, he said, we got to do something about Malcolm X. Me and Brother Muhammad, I want to thank Brother Muhammad Abdullah once again for an outstanding program this past Monday talking about Malik El-Shabazz, El-Hajj. So just Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wally, Malcolm X, Malcolm Little. You know, it's a good program, What are we talking about right now is sometimes those people are killed. Because as you know, this system has many ways of getting to you, not like the past, especially in today's society.
many ways. That's why I didn't advocate on this program taking the vaccine or not taking the vaccine. To those brothers and sisters who listen to this program, it was up to you. I know I wasn't going to do it with the history of this country. And knowing, too, that people who were pushing and promoting it the most were big proponents of population control and talking about getting rid of vast numbers of population, particularly us. Just like one of them British assholes, I think of Prince Harry or Prince, what's the other one? Whoever, whatever. Talking about, we must do something about Africa. Africa has too many. No, it don't. But they want to decrease Africa population. And I just saw, and I don't know if you know, of course you should know, but Africa's population, and as it relates to the coronavirus, it is not hitting Africa like that. I mentioned this before. I mentioned this on a program. It is not. But yet, they're, in a number of countries, they're getting the vaccine. And they're going to administer the vaccine. Yeah. According, Wilson believed that the vast power differentials between Africans and non-Africans was the major social problem of the 21st century. He believed these powers of differentials, and not simply racist attitudes, was chiefly responsible for the existence of racism and the conditioning domination of people of African descent across the globe. Caucasian people exercise racism because they have the power to do so. And remember, we said what power is, the ability to define reality. And that's what they have done. They have defined reality. And then they made others accept their definition as if it's their own. The question that we need to ask ourselves even to this very day, who are we in Europeans and Caucasians and white folks in Urugu's reality? Who are we? Well, first, of course, you know, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of, running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never creating anything of significance, never making any kind of creative contributions, and nothing could be further from the truth. But of course, when you perpetuate a lie consistently, it becomes not falsehood, but a reality. And that's what has happened. Many of our people believe that is the truth. Many of our people have been made to feel shame to be Africans. We've never done nothing. Many of our people believe that the Europeans created Kemet, or Egypt as it is known by them, Greek word Egypt, you know. As a scholar of African study, Dr. Amos Wilson felt that the social, political, and economic problems that Africans faced the world over were unlike those of any other group, and he is right. And thus, he argued that the concept of equal education ought to be abandoned in favor of a philosophy and approach appropriate for our needs. We want to go sit next to Caucasians. We want to go sit with Urugu and his classroom, and thinking we'll get a better education, as opposed to understanding that, no, we need to educate ourselves. The curriculum should be so designed for us and implemented by us. Wilson argued that the function of education and intelligence was to solve the problems, particularly to a people and a nation, and to secure that people and nation's biological survival. Any philosophy of education or approach which failed to do so was inadequate. Dr. Wilson further argued that the mythological notion of progress, which many Africans subscribe, was a false one, that integration could only occur and persist as a social economic reality as long as the U.S. and global economies continue to expand. If such an economic situation were ever to reverse or change for the worse, then the consequences which would follow could end up resulting in increased racial conflict or cultural conflict, and thus he argued Africans to consider disintegration as a realistic possibility, to prepare for all hypothetical scenarios, to prepare for all these hypothetical areas and scenarios, with the understanding that integration was not guaranteed to last forever. In fact, listen, integration means I'm going to integrate something, so I'm taking what I have, and you're bringing what you have, and we bring it together. So there's a respect for what I have, and there's a respect for what you have, bring it together. There was no respect. We didn't integrate. We assimilated. We assimilated, and they appropriated. Let me repeat. We assimilated, and they appropriated. They took what we have and what we brought and claimed it as their own. The entertainment, the music, the right, all the things that we are so beautifully endowed with, everything. Somebody mentioned that if we were so talented, that if everything being equal, then we would prosper. If everything being equal, we would begin to dominate. I mean, everything, in every endeavor. If there are no restrictions, then and we can go through that curriculum, education, sports, medicine, you name it, business, we dominate. Well, of course, you know we dominate sports, particularly the sports that Europeans make big money off of. Yeah. Next month's March Madness. March Madness is a stirring reminder of what made America financially great. That's right. Making tons of money off the unpaid labor of African people, men and women. The NCAA, their tournament, makes billions. The women's tournament makes hundreds of millions. And those young people don't get a damn dime. Wilson also believed that racism was structurally and institutionally driven phenomenon derived from the inequalities of the power relationships between groups and could persist even if and when more overt oppression expressions of it were no longer present. Racism then could only be neutralized by transforming society structurally and the systems of power relationships. And he's correct, because these Caucasians will never share. It's not in them to do so. It is not who they are. They give lip service to everything. They went around the world and began to take everybody's stuff in the name of, once again, power, the ability to define reality, then have others accept your definition. Those who are outside of you accept your definition as if it's their own. The idea that we must necessarily arrive at a point greater than that reached by our ancestors could possibly be an illusion. The idea that somehow, according to some great universal principle, that we're going to be in a better condition than our ancestors is an illusion, which often results from not studying history and recognizing that progressions and regressions occur, that integrations and disintegrations occur in history. From Dr. Amos Wilson's book, The Falsifications of African Consciousness. Falsifications of African consciousness. The books that he had written, The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child in 1978, Black on Black Violence, The Psychodynamics of Black Self-Annihilation and Service to White Domination, Understanding Black Adolescent Male Violence, Mediation and Prevention, 1992. Awakening the Natural Genius of the Black Child, 1992. falsifications of African consciousness, Eurocentric history, psychiatry, and the politics of white supremacy, 1993. Blueprint for Black Power, a moral, political, and economic imperative for the 21st century, 1998. African-centered consciousness versus the New World Order, Garveyism in the Age of Globalism, 1999. The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child, its second edition, came out in 2014. Issues of Manhood in Black and White, an incisive look at masculinity and the societal definitions of African men. Psychology of Self-Hatred and Self-Defeat Toward Reclamation of the African Mind in year 2020, very recent. Like I say, even though he died in 1995, those brothers and sisters, he had material to put out, particularly the Blueprint for Black Power. In fact, I'm going to play a couple of things, but I'm going to play this one right quick. And in the second half, there's a Blueprint for Black Power I'm going to play. And then we're going to have discussion. So I appreciate you. I think we have a number of people on the queue, so continue to listen. But right now, this is Dr. Amos Wilson.
Consciousness. Without human consciousness, there is no world. It is the presence of human consciousness that brings meaning into the world. Without human beings in this world, conscious human beings in this world, in effect, there would not be a world. We bring the world into being through our consciousness. And through our consciousness, we create the world we live in. Out of the totality of reality, our consciousness cuts out a world that befits itself. In other words, the kind of world you exist in reflects the kind of consciousness that you have. And notice, if you change your consciousness or change your values and orientation, you enter into a different world. You interact with different people. People often that you didn't even know existed in the world. Social situations that you might not have even recognized until you entered into a new level of consciousness. You see people, say, for instance, who become addicted, say, to crack or something, and now enter into a whole world and enter into a whole social system that before they became addicted, they hardly noticed. They didn't know what it was all about. And they picked up new friends and new relations, whole new ways of acting, whole new purposes in life. They lost old friends, broke with old families, all kinds of things. In other words, the consciousness, that addictive consciousness, brought into the world a new foreground and put other things into the background. Therefore, man's consciousness is a creative act. And the kind of consciousness you have will determine the kind of world you create. Right. And consequently, when you look at the world that we live in, African people, we must recognize to a great extent it is a world of our own creation. Right. It is a world that has been generated by the type of consciousness we've been permitted to be instilled in us as a people.
Consciousness. I often say I've dedicated my life to helping to raise the consciousness of African people. And if Malik Shabazz would say, by any means necessary. Yeah. I'm going to get ready to take a break so we can have, I'm going to play a good portion, not about a third of what it is, of a quarter really what it is, of Blueprint for Black Power presentation that Dr. Amos Wilson gave. Then we're going to open up the line for questionings. This is his birthday. This is the day that it was possible for him to be here in 1941 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And we're paying tribute to a great scholar, a great warrior scholar, a Pan-Africanist. His influence, Marcus Mosiah Garvey, was his influence. You know? So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to be right back. You stay with us, and we'll be talking to you, and hopefully you'll join the conversation and give us perspectives of yours. Give us your African perspective on Dr. Amos Wilson, the warrior scholar that Dr. Amos Wilson was. So you stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
And therefore our differences appear to maintain the whole. So the main problem of a society is to maintain enough cohesion so people can act together and behave.
Apologize, family. Family, I forgot to play the music we're going to play, and here we go. We're excited.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
And therefore, our differences are here to maintain the whole. So the main problem of a society is to maintain enough cohesion so people can act together and behave together and act in synchrony one with the other and cooperate with each other, but not be too overly organized so that they cannot bring their own creative perspectives to problems and issues. You see, and this becomes the problem of society. So there must always be that tension between being in the society and obeying its rules, but being a little bit off so that we can say, hey, maybe if you look at it this way, we can work it out and we can deal with it this way. So the personality itself must carry the element of society within itself. But the thing we must note, that personality, consciousness, and culture are cultural creation. And the type of culture that people exhibit and the type of consciousness we exhibit and the type of personality we exhibit reflects the type of history and experience we've undergone as people. When you let another people then be the determiner of your history and experience, they then become the determiners of your consciousness, of your personality, and of your culture. Ultimately, we must recognize that we use consciousness to deal with the world. Culture is an adaptative tool. It's an instrument by which we deal with reality, by which we adapt to reality, and by which we adapt reality to ourselves. The kind of consciousness we have will determine how we deal with reality. Consciousness then will, in the fact that it determines how we are going to deal with reality, how we change reality, then is a power. Because ultimately, power is about enabling something to take place. The ability to do something, the ability to change something, the ability to adapt, the ability to defend oneself, the ability to change oneself in order to solve a problem. This is what culture is about. Culture is not static. Culture is not stuck in one place. Culture itself must reconstruct itself if the system in which it exists is reconstructed and rearrange. That is why some of us get in trouble, because we want to find an African culture stuck somewhere back in the 13th century and want to apply it to ourselves at this point in a different context. African culture is not a culture stuck in place and time. African culture is constantly changing and evolving because the context in which African people live changes and evolves. What makes it African culture is that it operates in the interest of African people. It is designed to advance African people. And therefore, the consciousness must be measured in terms of the degree to which it maintains our survival and advances our interests and puts us at the center of our concern and at the center of our purposes. When then we talk about Black culture, make sure we're not talking about a reactionary culture, a culture that has been generated by our reaction to our abuse by white folk and to our control and domination of white folk. Because it's a good part of what we call Black culture that we need to exorcise from our psyches so that we can evolve a culture and an African-centered culture to advance our interests as a people. Another very important aspect then of consciousness is what we call values. Those things that we prefer, those things that we see as right, those things that we think we should need, those things the pursuit of which determines our behavior, organizes our minds. Value are what I call the directional factors of consciousness. What are we talking about here?
When you value something, and that value is implanted in your brain, the brain calls forth all of its resources, all of the content that it has, the knowledge it has available to it, the behavioral skills it has available to it, the cognitive skills, the thinking skills, and things like that that it has available to it, and organizes those things and relates those things one to each other in such a way that the value can be achieved. When we then think about something that we value and we want to realize something that we value, we consciously or unconsciously assess our mind and say, do I have the relevant knowledge? Do I have the relevant skills? Do I have the relevant thinking and cognitive skills so that we can organize these knowledge and skills in a way that we can achieve those values? If we believe we have those skills, if we believe we have the content, if we appropriately organize those contents through thought, then we pursue those values. And chances are we may realize those values. If though we have those values and we assess ourselves, we recognize that we don't have the appropriate skills, we don't have the appropriate knowledge and content, we don't have the appropriate thought styles and so forth, we then say, well, maybe we should develop the requisite skills. Maybe we should learn the requisite knowledge. Maybe we should develop the means of thinking. And once we do this, we will then organize them in a way to achieve our values. Once we then have values and are guided by values, and those values guide those skills and contents and so forth, we are empowered to realize those values. And therefore, values are a type of power. Where am I going with this? I'm going with this to say this. If values are a type of power, if values are the things that guide our behavior, if culture is a type of power, and consciousness is a type of power, and personality is a type of power, if we let another people determine the nature of our consciousness, our personality, and our value, they then gain power over us. If consciousness, culture, personality, and values are instruments of power, they then use our consciousness, our values, our culture as their instruments of power. How does this work out in reality? They take our cultural products, our music, our song, and use them as their instruments of power. Yes, and benefit from them. So then, what is an African-centered consciousness? An African-centered consciousness is one that is based on African-centered content, based on African-centered knowledge, based on African-centered values, based on an African-centered consciousness. To the degree that our consciousness is based on African-centered values and so forth, we are empowered as African people. To the degree those values and consciousness are determined by other people, we become their instruments of power, and they use us against ourselves. So consequently, if we are to be empowered, and if our power is to work in our interest, then our consciousness must be an African consciousness. Our value must be African value. Our personality must be an African-based personality. If not, we may suffer first ethnocide and then genocide. What are we saying? It means that our culture will not be functional in a way that it protects our interests. We must then, as a people, develop a new African consciousness, an African-centered consciousness, and that means we must develop it based on an African history, African culture, and African values. Most of all, we must develop an African sense of nationhood. To a great extent, many of the problems we suffer today is a result of the fact that we do not see ourselves as a nation. And yet, we complain about how we are segregated from everybody else. We complain about how we are not a part of the mainstream, how we are not a part of the economy, how we are shut out from the government and the political process. If we are not a part of these things, and yet these things are what defines a nation, then we are not a part of the American nation. That nation is a white nation. We are then, in effect, a de facto nation, but we are afraid to recognize it. If we looked at ourselves as a nation, we'd see many of the reasons why we are where we are as a people. Why? Because if we looked at ourselves as a nation, we would see why we have the problems we have. Why do we have some of the problems we have? For the same reason other African nations have the problems they have. Why? Because we permit our resources, human resources, and material resources to be used by another people. We export them. We, like any other African nation, are an indebted nation. We are over-indebted. When we talk about the African nation suffering from being overburdened by debt, we don't recognize we're talking about ourselves. When I ask here tonight how many of us owes another black institution, another black person major debt, we would get very few hands. But if I ask how many of us in this audience tonight owed a white person, a white institution, a non-African institution, great debts, we probably all have to raise our hands. If you recognize that then, and you add this up in terms of a nation, not if you, just yourself as an individual, but if you look at all of us as individuals and in terms of a nation, then that as a nation, we owe an enormous debt to other people. And one of the reasons why then we are poverty stricken is not because we don't have money. It's because all of our money is being used to service the debt that other nations own, that the white nation in America own. And because we spend so much time paying our installment plans and paying our money out to these other nations of people, we cannot save our monies, we cannot accumulate our money and create wealth so that we can employ ourselves as a people, so that we can support our families as a people, so that we cannot build the schools we need to build to educate our children the way we need to educate them as a people. And consequently, we have the similar problems that all African nations have almost, where they cannot build highways or build schools or build hospitals or build institutions, communication systems, and other systems, because all of the wealth that they are generating is being exported out to European nations and other nations to whom they owe debt. But you can only see this when you look at yourself as a nation. And when you look at yourself as a nation, then you can see that you can change this problem by changing the debt relationship you have to other people. I was looking at an issue here the other day when we were talking about looking at African nations, and we talk about the African nations as monoculture, meaning that they often exist by shipping out one or two major products, cocoa or cocoa beans or oil or gold or something like that. And they ship these products out into what we call a buyer's market. That is, the people they sell these products to set the prices that they're going to pay for these products. So that many of these nations now are being paid less for their products than they were paid 30 years ago. And yet, the nations that buy their product and lower the prices on their product are selling them back those products in processed form and selling them back their own products that have been manufactured here for higher and higher prices. And then we wonder why Africa is in debt and why Africa is impoverished. But that is the result of the fact that they are caught up in an impoverishing mechanism. But we need not talk about the continental African because we are in the same situation here today. The African-American nation is a monoculture. What is the commodity that we sell? Labor. We're not selling much manufacturing. We're not selling much other products. The major commodity that we have to sell was the commodity that we were bought over here for in the first place. And what was that? Labor. And now we are selling our labor in a buyer's market, meaning that the people who buy our labor are buying it at the prices they set. And they keep devaluing the price that they're willing to pay for our labor. On top of devaluing the price, they're no longer even demanding the labor. So after a while, we won't be able to sell our labor at any price. And we will then be totally deprived as a people. And therefore, we are caught in a similar position. And just as there's social disorganization in the African nations, there's social disorganization in the American nation. You cannot have your wealth flowing out of your nation. You cannot enrich other people at the expense of yourself and not have social disorganization. And that means then, if we look at ourselves as a nation, the African-American nation must do what all African nations must do. We must capture our own internal resources. We must gain control of our own internal market. We must trade within ourselves as a people and a group and generate wealth within our own nation as a means of counterbalancing our dependence upon Europeans and upon the white nation itself. But in order to do this, we must have a nation consciousness. We must now organize and relate to ourselves as a nation of people. When we look at our relationship, we say to the Koreans as a nation, we see the same relationship that Japan has to America as a nation. You notice that they are bargaining right now, negotiating, right? Japan is building up its resources. It is blocking out U.S. industry from its nation, yet it is entering into the American markets and selling there and taking out the wealth of the American markets. If we look at our relationship to Koreans, to Dominicans, to other groups, we'll see the same relationship where those groups can enter into the African-American nation, set up shop, ship out its wealth day by day and night by night, and yet the African-American entrepreneurial nation is not permitted to set up shop in their midst, is not permitted to carry wealth from their nations. And they then grow fat on the surplus that they gain from the African-American nation. This means then that if we think of ourselves as a nation, we must protect our internal market from the intrusion of outsiders. We must not permit them entry into our nation. As I look and I see down the 125th Street, yes, and look at our people locked outside there in the outside, and some people claim that they are protesting this kind of thing. I agree with our vendors there that if black men and black women cannot make a living on that street, then no other people should be permitted to make a living on that street. We are not obligated in any kind of way to feed the children of other people before we feed our own. But it's only if you think in terms of nationhood that you can resolve this kind of problem. We have tremendous possibilities as a black nation that we don't know where. You can see these white boys over there pursuing China, don't you? Right? They're over to China, knocking over each other to get to it. What is the China market worth to the European? You know what the China market is worth to the European? $500 billion at this point. Do you know what the black market is worth to the European here in America? $400 billion. Our market is as much worth as much as the Chinese market, the Mexican market, which they've drawn up to bring in NAFTA. It is worth as much and is worth more than the market of Canada. We are not able to place conditions on their entry into our markets by saying, if you enter here, you are going to pay taxes. If you enter here, you're going to leave something here. If you enter here, you're going to leave money in the institution. You're going to contribute to our schools. You're going to contribute to our recreational centers. You're going to contribute to the employment of our people and to the stability of our families. If you cannot contribute to these things, if you cannot create jobs, if you cannot contribute to the education of our people, then we cannot permit you to operate within our borders. This is the way a nation runs. You don't let another people walk in and have their way and walk out and leave you impoverished as a people in the name of a free market. There's no such thing as a free market. Yeah. That's white folks' propaganda. Free and open market. No free market. They force people into their market. Castro was not free to say, I don't want to be a part of it. When he said, I don't want to be a part of it, they did what? Embargoed him and locked him out. The Japanese in the early part of the century said, we don't want to be a part of your market. What did the United States do? Sent Admiral Perry in there and blasted those markets open. What free market do you have there? There's no such thing as free market. And when you learn that, you're gonna be the better for it. And we got the market, but we are not taking advantage of it. We've gotten ourselves in a situation where we are locked out of other people's markets and we permit them into our own, such that we are locked out of our own market. And then we wonder why we suffer the way we do. It is not because we are poor. If we were that poor and impoverished, then why do those people come to us to earn their living and their wealth? It means then we must be a wealthy people. I was looking over here at a recent report. You see, we have as a people everything that it needs to make a nation. We have telephones, fax machines, computers, highways, bridges, riverways, waterways, trucks, everything that many nations in the world, in fact, the vast majority of nations in the world, wish that they had available to them what the African-American nation has available to it. They wish they had the highway. They wish they had the truck. They wish they had the trains. They wish they had the ship. They wish they had the computers, the telephone, and all of those kinds of things that you can just pick up and dial right away, and they don't have to be routed through France or somewhere else. The lights don't go off at 2 o'clock every day or just flip on and off. You got it all here. Then why then are we not better off than we are? Because it is not enough, as I told you earlier, it is not enough to have gold in your soil or oil in your soil or diamonds in your soil. You must have a consciousness. It is only with an appropriate consciousness that these things can be transformed and converted into what? Wealth and power, and can be used for the advancement of a people and the survival of a people. The same is true here then. You cannot just have telephones and faxes and this and that and not just have money in your pocket. That's not enough. You must have a consciousness that transforms those phones and transforms those faxes into a communications network that unites a people across regions and places and cities and becomes a basis for a system of distribution, a basis for uniting and creating a market from which one earns wealth to feed one's family and to stabilize one's social situation. But you can have all of these things, but if you don't have a sense of nation, if you don't have a group consciousness, if you do not identify yourself as a nation, then these are but so many instruments and becomes, as a matter of fact, the means by which we destroy ourselves. We're looking at the black buying power in America here, 1990 to 95. We got a report here called the Georgia Business and Economic Condition, published here by the Selig Center at the University of Georgia, titled Black Buying Power by Place of Residence, 1990 to 95. The second of a two-part analysis of buying power in specific markets. What are we talking about here? Is this published for us? No. What it's published for is for white folk. And it's telling them how much money black folk got. And it's telling them that the money black folk got is the difference between their success and their failure. It reads in part here, Georgia's African-American population thus controls approximately 16 cents of each dollar in spending power. That is about $1, $1 in six is spent by black consumers. How aware are we of the kind of power we have as African people? Clearly, they are a substantial economic force throughout the state. But without a nation of consciousness, you don't recognize that. But they recognize it. They go on to say, for many of Georgia's businesses, the ability to capture black spending can make the difference between success and failure. They're putting it right in your face. If black spending can make the difference between the success and failure of Georgia businesses, and we're talking about what? White folks' businesses. That means black folk got what? Power. Because power is about what? The ability to succeed or to bring about what? Failure. And when somebody else's success or failure depends on your own behavior, then you have what? Power. New York State, the largest black market in the world, the largest black market in the world, and the largest black market in this country. How much money are we worth in New York State, black people? You know how much money we are worth? $61 billion. That is a lot of money. This represents well over 10% of the buying power in New York State alone. I'm speaking of the area, the New York, Connecticut, tri-state area. And what does that mean? Now, but don't look at that absolute figure. Look at what would happen if we reinvested that $60 billion. If we put that $60 billion in black businesses, in black trade, if we invested that $60 billion in gaining equity in the major American corporations, if we use that $60 billion to gain equity in African countries. You know, I was just reading a piece this week about the fact that black investment bankers, a couple of black investment bankers, are selling as much as $100 million of bonds for the African Development Bank. Yes, another black investment banker is selling something like $500 million of securities for African businesses and infrastructural development. What does that mean, African people? That means that if we were knowledgeable of corporate finance, if we were knowledgeable of investment vehicles, we could literally finance the development of Africa. And by buying securities in the African Development Bank, by buying bonds, by buying other investment instruments in African corporations, even if they're owned by white folks, because once we buy the shares, we become the owners. In other words, then, by using black wealth, we can become the vehicle for financing African growth and development. And by using our own wealth and financing our own businesses, developing our own economic system, we would multiply our wealth, and we would not only be then worth $400 billion, we'd be worth $800 billion or more. And we would go stronger. And the stronger we grow, the more others would depend upon how we spend in order to survive. And to that degree, we will gain power over them. If tomorrow we decided as African people to build co-op supermarkets across this country, and we can do it, so that we can sell our people grocery and food at below wholesale prices, if we decided, using our church organizations as a means for sponsoring these co-op food markets across the country so that we could open them literally simultaneously, and centered in the buying power for all of those co-op centers in a way that then we would have billions of dollars to spend with the suppliers of food. We could then manipulate those producers in terms of the buying power that we have. We can begin then to place our people on their board. We can begin then to have real and substantial power in America. We have it in our hand, but you got to think of it as nation. It becomes interesting, by the way, if you study this particular breakdown of black spending in Georgia, and I wish we would get these breakdowns across the country. You see, when you become a state and a nation, you develop statistics, you see, and that's where statistics come from. It is the means by which a state and a nation gathers information about itself so that it can use that information to reorganize itself and to set itself up in ways to advance its interests. So once you become a nation, you become sensitive to the fact that you need a lot of information so that you can use this information. Now, when I read about the percentage of black buying power in Georgia by county, something becomes very surprising. You know, for instance, that black buying power is as high as 25 and 26% in many of these counties. For instance, in Liberty County, Georgia, black buying power there is 22% of the total buying power. In Meriwether, 25%. Peach County, 25%. And you can just go on and on. In some of these counties, black buying power is as much as 45%, 35%. In other words, the black consumer has these counties by the balls. And they are able, if that buying power was to be coordinated and used, to have real impact and to transform the power relations of those societies and of those counties. They would be able, if they are buying half or 25% or 30% of what is being bought in those counties, to establish their own businesses and enterprises there. And they would be able to defend those businesses and enterprises through the use of the boycott weapon. So what are we saying here then this evening, ladies and gentlemen? That African power is based on an African consciousness, based on an African-centered culture, based on an African-centered personality. And the degree to which our personalities and our culture are based on African value, based on African interests, based on African goals, to that degree, we empower ourselves as Africans, and to that degree, we escape the power of others over us. Thank you very much for your time.
Dr. Amos Wilson. Dr. Amos Wilson.
Dr. Amos Wilson. As you can see, brothers and sisters, the possibilities are there for us. But because we don't have our right minds, and because we don't think in those terms, and because we're not collective, and the problem for us here in this country, but what he was speaking of was a global situation. Globally. What if African people, wherever we are, and we're saying to the brothers and sisters on the continent, we're saying to the brothers and sisters in the diaspora, let us pool our resources, plant them in Africa, control the mineral wealth of Africa, control the land of Africa. We could feed ourselves. We can build roads and highways, railroads and ports, schools and hospitals, subdivisions throughout the continent, manage the land, make sure that the migration patterns are maintained for the animals. Make sure that people who want to come see animals can do that, not the hunters, not the Caucasians who come, who are very wealthy and come and hunt. No. And if there is hunting places, we control that too. We control everything that's happening on the continent. Everything. Because it is ours. When I look at a map of Africa, I don't see the 54 countries that are carved up at the Berlin Conference of 1884-85. I don't see that. I see the continent of Africa from south to north, from east to west, total. I don't even see the northern part of Africa dominated by Arabs, dominated by Berbers and whoever else. I don't see that. I see Africans controlling that. I see Africans controlling the wealth of the continent. And whoever wants whatever they want, they pay fair market value for. You remember I played that Howard Nicholas piece. You can go on, you can go to YouTube and put in Howard Nicholas. Africa must remain poor. We must be able to manipulate Africa to get its resources. That's, to me, this man saying these things openly, and I understand something. I understand what he's saying, of course. But saying openly like that is like a declaration of war. It's a declaration to our very survival as African people. And not just on the continent, but throughout. Because everywhere on the planet, African people are disrespected. Because why? We have no functional unity. When Dr. Amos Wilson is talking about the blueprint for Black Power, in the book, you know, I've read bits and pieces of it when it first came out. It was awe-inspiring, just like Urugu. When those two books came out, man, they both came out in the 90s. Whew. But there's one piece in the book where it talks about a church in New York that's controlling the resources of a community. And the parishioners, and their number, I think, in the hundreds, maybe even the thousands, who are committed to helping to finance projects that the church, you know, looks at, a nursing home, all kind of other programs that the church initiated within the neighborhood, and they finance those projects. It is possible, but that's small compared to what we could do collectively. But the model is there because the church is being collective. Those parishioners are saying, let's pull our monies together. Not just to, you know, pay the tithes of the church and keep the pastor looking good and him having a nice house and a real nice car and some upkeep over the church. No, for progress that benefit the parishioners, that benefit the community, that benefit the people. It doesn't happen too often, or does it? Does it? Does it happen in your community? Do you see some prominent churches? I think about Milwaukee. I know some big churches. But the bottom line is, it's not about the church. It's about the people. It's about us reclaiming, recapturing, and restoring our culture, our traditions, our identity, our self-respect, how we do stuff. That's what it's about. And if we don't do it, who's going to do it? If you want to get in this conversation, brothers and sisters, please hit star twice. There's a few of you on here. Hit star twice. They'll get you in. Can give you questions, comments, or your concerns as it relates to Dr. Amos Wilson. Today is his birthday. And we're paying tribute to Dr. Amos Wilson for what he has brought to us, for how he articulated our issues, you know. So I'm saying that's important for us to recognize a warrior and what he has brought and what he still brings as an ancestor. And I recognize those other ancestors of ours. You know, he unequivocally says, my guide, my Jegna, was Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And many others could say the same thing, particularly those who are Pan-Africanists, those who are cultural nationalists, those who believe in Africans doing for Africa. Whether you're on the continent, in the African diaspora, I recognize Dr. John Henry Clark as the master teacher that he was. I recognize that and respect that. It is in our hands. It is up to us. Nobody's going to do this for us. It is our responsibility. It is our future and the future of our children and grandchildren. Just as he said earlier in something that I've read for the listening audience, is that they're not going to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. Integration is not forever. And when things start to get rough, just like it has in the past, last hired, first fired, and all this kind of stuff, it is going to happen to us. It is going to happen. But because we've been trained to have faith in this system, trained to believe that somehow that this system, even though we're going to struggle and fight and so forth, but it's just as much ours as it is theirs. How foolish. This is theirs. And to me, if you can't see that with all that is going on, with all the shenanigans legally, politically, voting, all of those things, you are naive. You are deeply ignorant. So I, you know, brothers and sisters, you know, I have zero faith in this country doing what would be necessary to be a truly inclusive country, a fair country, a country dealing with equality and fairness and justice and truth and all those kinds of things. I have zero. Now, you know, somebody can point to the verdict of Ahmaud Arbery, and I'm happy for the Arbery family. I'm happy for his mother. I'm happy for the situation. They got those three Caucasians on hate crimes. So now they're really going to serve some time. It's going to be very hard. You know, they got them on hate crimes. And to me, rightfully so. We got a caller, 414. Good afternoon.
Hey, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother LaRue. What's happening?
Who's your number one fan? But anyway.
That's right, brother. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. Amos was off to, man, he was so on point with that. And but I'm kind of switching it up because I read Black on Black, one Black on Black crime,
right?
Violence or
something.
Yeah.
Listen, Brother LaRue, anyway, you are breaking up on me. Why don't you call me and call back, okay? And see if that'll clear that up.
Okay.
Okay. Call me and call right back, brother.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I'll call you right back.
Yeah, because he's. I don't know how you hear, but it coming into my headphones, man, it's tough. Yeah, Yeah, black on black violence. Yep. Brother LaRue, are you there?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Is that better?
Oh, much better. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, man. I just finished watching. They've been running a series of programs of Black History, and I just finished watching Eye on the Prize, and I'm looking at where we were then, and what we had, and where we are now, and what we have. And if that don't tell us, if we can't learn from that, if we can't see for ourselves on that one, man, I don't know what more we could say, man.
Well, you, I agree with you in that respect that the Caucasian has consistently told us and consistently shown us that he ain't gonna do a damn thing for your ass, consistent over this many years. You know. He has constantly shown us. And every social ill is more profound in us than anybody else. It defies all laws of probability. We're supposedly I'm sorry, go ahead.
How many African American banks you know are in Milwaukee right now?
There are none.
How many did we have 20 years ago?
Three. Along with two savings and loans, that's five. The only institution they have now is Columbia Savings and Loan.
So that shows you how much. In the smaller towns, man, they're even eliminating Black communities, especially in my hometown.
Yeah,
they took the projects out, and that broke up the economic base for that area.
Well, just this morning, watching the national news, they're doing what they've done historically. They're about to expand an expressway in Houston because of the amount of traffic, and they're doing it in the Black neighborhood, in American African neighborhoods. The one preacher is upset highly because he has done a lot of work to get his church, you know, to look the way that it does, and then they're talking about the highway going through that community.
I'm saying I don't know, there's lessons to be learned, but anyway, let me catch my door, man. Somebody
okay
my door.
All right, Brother LaRue, talk to you in a minute, bro.
Okay,
all right
peace.
Yeah, so you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? Yeah, exactly. This situation is like a revolving door over and over until we make it stop. The only way that it will stop is when we make it stop. The only way. It is up to us. But because of the training, because of the educational system, because of how we have been influenced and manipulated and undermined, we behave and act the way that we do, we're constantly begging of people who can't stand us. We're constantly begging of people whose ultimate desire is to eliminate us. And not just Europeans, every damn body else. There's no love for us. Dr. Clark, once again, has said it best. We have no friends. Brothers and sisters, we have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror and don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. And I ain't talking about your arched eyebrows or the dimples in your damn cheeks. I'm talking about who you are historically and culturally. That you love yourself and you love those who look like you, those who are you. You respect them. You're willing to work with them. You're willing to strive and do things with them. You like what you see. I love African people. I love Africa. I recognize what has happened to us and what continues to happen to us. I don't blame us. It's frustrating. It's frustrating as hell. And I know, just was about to say, I've heard, you know, some of our people say one of the things I hate and detest the most, we're our own worst enemy. God, I jumped on the elder at a public presentation. I did, you know, I'm going to say I was, you know, I apologized to him, but I had to jump on him because we're not our quote own worst enemy. What we do is despicable to one another and trifling and hurtful. But what is an enemy? What is an enemy? Who has shown historically to be an enemy to African people? Those who are outside of Africa, whether they're now called Chinese, called Japanese, called Koreans, whether they're called Indians, whether they call Europeans, Caucasians, Yorugu, those are our enemies. They are our worst enemy. What they have done is make us believe that we are the problem with each other. Yes, we killed each other. One of Dr. Amos Wilson's works, you know, Black on Black Violence in Service to Black Annihilation. Yeah, I tell you. So, you know, we have a lot to do. We have a lot to do. It is our responsibility. That's why when he was talking and that presentation was part of a almost 2.5 hour presentation on the Blueprint for Black Power. It's the tail end of it. I thought that was more appropriate to play, but all of it is good. In fact, last week I talked about, you know, some of the things from that book when Dr. Wilson was still living out, although the book was published after he made his transition. But, you know, it is a prime example of what we must do. And one of the things he said is that we must educate ourselves. Wouldn't it be great if the monies that we have, the spending power that we would have, learn how to use that money as opposed to being very materialistic, but used it in such a way that we put that money in to develop these supermarkets that could sell the produce that American African farmers produce and other American African growers and food distributors can produce for us. Their outlets, they're ours in our community, employing our kids and employing our people. It is possible. Building the schools that are ours, that we teach an African center curriculum, and we ain't worried about nothing that the Department of Public Instruction has to say about a damn thing. We don't go by dictates. We have control over our children. All these things, dear brothers and sisters, are possible when you have your right mind. All these things are possible when you can purge yourself of the ignorance of the ignorance. Some of these publications are not as thick as Blueprint for Black Power, but The Falsification of African Consciousness, Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. Excellent book. Awakening the Natural Genius of Black Children. Black on Black Violence, the Psychodynamics of Black and Self-Annihilations in Service to White Domination. These are, the development of psychology of the black child. You know, it might be about 100 pages, a little over 100 pages or so. I think Blueprint for Black Power is like 800 pages, you know. So don't be intimidated by none of this work. It is work that you need. African-centered consciousness versus the New World Order. Garveyism in the age of globalism. We must embrace the idea of Garveyism, which is Pan-Africanism, cultural nationalism, in the age of this global situation that we can carve out a position for ourselves and do for ourselves. I've been playing, and I'll continue to play that piece of the 10 countries with them with world resources, and how if we control those resources, we would be players in the world instead of pawns. And we must become that. We must become that, brothers and sisters. It is critical for the survival of African people. Critical. Yeah. Well, get ready to close the program. I thank you for listening. I had a lot of callers. Some just went in there and they started to hang up. But, you know, I don't know the callers on the internet. Not the callers, but those who listen by internet. You know, and I appreciate those. I appreciate all of them. Believe me, I do. So I'll see you on Friday. See you on Friday. And then I think Monday is the last day of the History Month, and why the History Month is important. We'll talk about that. And so, brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Friday. Peace, family.